Welcome to Words to Live By, a podcast series hosted by the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute. Each week, we'll share some of the wit and wisdom of Ronald Reagan. In essence, words to live by, made up of radio addresses and speeches he delivered from the 1960s through the 1980s.
Human Rights Day is observed every year on December 10th, the day the United National General Assembly adopted, in 1948, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which is a milestone document that proclaims the inalienable rights which everyone is entitled to as human beings, regardless of race, color, religion, sex, language, political or other opinion, national or social origin, property, birth, or other status. President Reagan, with his message of freedom and democracy for all, felt very strongly about human rights. As he once said, "The founders of our country believe the rights of the individual are God-given, not originating from or granted by the state. Their timeless vision of individual liberties for all people is why we pause each December to express thanks for our heritage and to renew our commitment to the vital cause of human rights around the globe." Let's now listen to President Reagan's remarks in 1988 after signing the Human Rights Day Proclamation.
Well, thank you all. It's a pleasure to welcome you all here as we mark Human Rights Week. 40 years ago this week, the United Nations General Assembly adopted the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. For people of goodwill around the world, that document is more than just words. It's a global testament of humanity, a standard by which any humble person on earth can stand in judgment of any government on earth. Yes, we're here to recognize a set of ideals, our fundamental belief in the unalienable rights of man. But were it not for the people who work to uphold these ideals, then our words would be hollow and our vision without effect. So let us record that today we're also honoring a community of people, the heroes who have dedicated their lives to these values, who work to keep the world informed, who lend their voices to those denied the right to speak for themselves, and who at times have lost their own freedom and even their lives because of their courage in speaking out for the freedom of others. This community includes such heroic figures as Nathan Sharansky, Lech Walesa, and Armando Valladares. It includes Nicaragua's Permanent Commission on Human Rights and Romania's Democratic Action. It includes peaceful groups that are working for multiracial democracy in South Africa, religious leaders in Vietnam, and activists working for Soviet Jewry, and also groups based in our own country working for democracy and human rights, such as Freedom House, Institute for Religion and Democracy, the Puebla Institute, the Cuban American National Foundation, and the AFL-CIO's Institutes for Free Labor Development. In addition, the cause of human rights has become an important factor in United States foreign policy. We have not brought these issues to the fore internationally because our own history is without blemish or sin, for it is not. Nor is our right to speak on these issues based on any claim to current perfection, because we do not make that claim. Instead, what we have said is this: that the critical moral distinction of our time is the clear difference between a philosophy of government that acknowledges wrongdoing and injustice and one that refuses to admit to such injustices and even justifies its own assaults on individual liberty in the name of a Sharemic utopian vision. The moral foundation of our human rights policy requires that we maintain a single standard of justice, and above all, that our policy must be an effective instrument for improving the lives of people, not an instrument for self-righteous self-satisfaction. Over these last 8 years and before, we've seen that representative democracy, for all its shortcomings and as imperfectly realized as it so often is still the best guarantor of human rights. So our concern for human rights must be used also to encourage the success of democratic institutions. The world has not failed to notice the great improvement in human rights that is possible when countries make the transition from authoritarianism to democracy. But we've also seen the capacity for bad situations to become far, far worse, for autocratic governments to be replaced by totalitarian dungeons like Cuba, Iran, and Nicaragua. Let us as Americans set forth a simple humane principle, and any policy carried out in the name of human rights must not bring harm to those whom it was supposed to help. It should not yield slavery when what it promised was freedom. In addition, we've seen that no totalitarian nation has ever made a peaceful transition to democracy. So this type of transition, which has improved the level of human rights for more people in more countries than any other factor, has not brought its benevolent fruits to the communist world. But reforms are possible and have indeed been occurring in Marxist-Leninist states. At my meeting yesterday with Mr. Gorbachev, as at each previous meeting, human rights was one of the four key topics discussed. Certainly we're not yet satisfied, but there has been real progress which we must note and encourage. Many political and religious prisoners have been released, and many specific cases of family reunification and the like have been resolved. Emigration, though still below the levels of 10 years ago, has increased, but still much remains to be done to translate words into deeds, to bring the peoples of the Soviet Union the full rights to which their government has committed itself under international agreements, including freedom of assembly, freedom of worship, national expression, and the right to leave one's country and return. Specifically, we want to see the release of all political prisoners. Dozens remain imprisoned, including two Helsinki monitors, Lev Lukyanenko and Mykola Matusevich. Well, we await permission for all long-term refusics to leave. For all long-term refusics, we look forward also to the repeal of unjust laws used to jail dissenters. And I believe we learned yesterday that there is some improvement coming immediately in that regard in the one country I've mentioned. We are, however, concerned by two new laws cited by Andrei Sakharov on his recent visit. They seem to step backward, creating additional barriers to peaceful demonstrations, and that would increase the suppression of independent publications. One of the most important emerging forces of change is the information challenge to totalitarianism. Greater openness provides not just greater opportunities to exercise basic human rights, but also greater protection against a state that would infringe on those rights. And in this regard, Moscow's decision to stop jamming Radio Liberty and other Western broadcasts is welcome news. Economic freedom is also an important corollary of human rights. The time has come to recognize that the basic economic rights to own, use, and exchange property, to create and produce free of state control, are a fundamental part of human freedom and essential components to a decent and humane world for all peoples. Finally, human rights is inextricably linked to the issues of war and peace. Countries that violate the rights of their own citizens pose a threat to international peace. Moreover, in regarding nations that violate human rights, we should be particularly concerned about those that are expansionist and would expand the reach of tyranny and reduce the sum of freedom in the world. We should always remember that to be silent on the violation of human rights does not advance the cause of peace. It does not improve relations or promote international stability. It does just the opposite. Silence in the face of evil is a display of weakness that invites aggression. For the free world to morally disarm itself would be the most vile form of appeasement. Our duty is to speak out, and not just one day a year, but to make sure that every day is Human Rights Day. We owe this to the people of the world, but also we owe it to America, to the founding fathers whose vision of liberty we've seen so immeasurably blessed by. What defined America, what gave our nation its purpose and mission, was, as Abraham Lincoln put it, something in that Declaration of Independence giving liberty, not alone to the people of this country, but hope to the world. It was that which gave promise that in due time the weights would be lifted from the shoulders of all men. Well, I thank you and God bless you for all that you're doing, and now I shall sign the proclamation.
More from Ronald Reagan after this message.
The Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation is the nonprofit organization created by President Reagan himself, and specifically charged by him with continuing his legacy and sharing his principles: individual liberty, economic opportunity, global democracy, and national pride. We must remain vigilant and work together to share these conservative principles with younger generations. Your role is critical to move our mission forward. Thank you for your continued support. Please visit reaganfoundation.org/give. That's reaganfoundation.org/give.
In 1984, President Reagan spoke again about the importance of rededicating ourselves to the cause of human dignity and freedom, a cause, he said, goes to the heart of our national character and defines our national purpose. Let's listen.
Well, thank you very much. This ceremony marks more than another event of the White House calendar or another worthy cause for the national agenda. For in observing Human Rights Day, we rededicate ourselves to the cause of human dignity and freedom, a cause that goes to the heart of our national character and defines our national purpose. So today, we dare to affirm again the commitment of the American people to the inalienable rights of all human beings. In reaffirming our moral beliefs that began our nation, we strive to make the United States what we pray to God it will always be: a beacon of hope to all the persecuted and oppressed of the world. And we resolve that as a people, we'll never rest until the blessings of liberty and self-government are extended to all the nations of the earth. 2 years ago in London, when I called for a crusade for freedom and human rights, I noted that these ideals, embodied in the rule of law under God and the institutions of democratic self-government, were on the march. Because these ideals represent the oldest and noblest aspirations of the human spirit, I said then that this power is irresistible when compared to totalitarian ideologies that seek to roll back mankind's march to freedom. Today, I want to take special note of evidence that this desire for self-determination, this recognition by the state of the inalienable rights of men and women everywhere, is nowhere stronger than close to our own borders in the lands of Latin America. In contrast to only a few years ago, today more than 90% of the people in Latin America and the Caribbean live in nations either democratically governed or moving in that direction. While we're still doing all that we can to promote democratic change in nations such as Paraguay and Chile, we must not forget that over the last 5 years, in Argentina, Bolivia, Ecuador, El Salvador, Honduras, Panama, Peru, and most recently in Uruguay, military juntas have been replaced by elected civilian governments. And just last Monday, democratic values triumphed again as the people of Grenada freely elected a new civilian prime minister. Today, all who cherish human rights and individual freedom salute the people of the Americas for their great achievements. And we pledge to our neighbors the continued support and assistance of the United States as they transform our entire hemisphere into a haven for democracy, peace, and human rights. In other nations farther from our shores, we've also seen progress toward reducing the repression of human rights and some strengthening of democratic institutions. In some of these nations, which have authoritarian governments but friendly ties to the United States and the community of democratic nations, quiet diplomacy has brought about humane and democratic change. But we know There are occasions when quiet diplomacy is not enough, when we must remind the leaders of nations who are friendly to the United States that such friendship also carries responsibilities for them and for us. And that's why the United States calls for all governments to advance the democratic process and work toward a system of government based on the consent of the governed. From our beginning, regard for human rights and the steady expansion of human freedom have defined the American experience, and they remain today the real moral core of our foreign policy. The United States has said on many occasions that we view racism with repugnance. We feel a moral responsibility to speak out on this matter, to emphasize our concerns and our grief over the human and spiritual costs of apartheid in South Africa, to call upon the government of South Africa to reach out to its black majority by ending the forced removal of blacks from their communities and the detention without trial and lengthy imprisonment of black leaders. Such action can comfort only those whose vision of South Africa's future is one of polarization, violence, and the final extinction of any hope for peaceful, democratic government. At the same time, we note with satisfaction that the South African government has released 11 black leaders, including the top leaders of two of that country's most important labor unions. Because we care deeply about the people of South Africa and the future of that nation, we ask that the constructive changes of recent years be broadened to address the aspirations of all South Africans. Peaceful change in South Africa and throughout Southern Africa can come only when blacks and whites find a durable basis to live together, when they establish an effective dialogue, a dialogue sustained by adherence to democratic values and a belief in governments based on the consent of the governed. We urge both the government and the people of South Africa to move toward a more just society. We pledge here today that as South Africans address the imperatives of constructive change, they will have the unswerving support of our government and people in this effort. A few years ago, when I spoke of totalitarian ideologies as the greatest threat to personal freedom in the world today and the most persistent source of human suffering in our century, I also pointed out that the United States, too, has faced evils like racism, anti-Semitism, and other forms of intolerance and disregard for human freedom. So while we work to see human rights extended throughout the world, this observance of Human Rights Day reminds us of our responsibility to assure against injustice and intolerance in our own land as well. And today I call on the American people to reaffirm in our daily lives and in the workings of our private and governmental institutions a commitment to brotherhood and equal justice under the law. But we do a serious disservice to the cause of human rights if we forget that however mistaken and wrong, however stumbling the actions of democracies in seeking to achieve the ideals of freedom and brotherhood, our philosophy of government permits us to acknowledge, debate, and then correct mistakes, injustices, and violations of human rights. Let us always remember the critical moral distinction of our time, the clear difference between a philosophy of government that acknowledges wrongdoing and injustice, and one that refuses to admit to such injustices and even justifies its own assaults on individual liberty in the name of a chimeric utopian vision. Such brutal affronts to the human conscience as the systematic suppression of individual liberty in the Soviet Union and the denial of religious expression by Christians, Jews, and Muslims in that country are tragic examples. Today, for example, the largest remaining Jewish community in Europe, Soviet Jewry, is again being exposed to a systematic anti-Semitic campaign. Ominously, teachers of the Hebrew language have been arrested in their efforts to preserve their culture and religion, treated as a crime. Soviet authorities are continuing to threaten many refuseniks with confinement in psychiatric hospitals, expulsion from their jobs, and internal exile. Yet thousands of Soviet Jews have applied for permission to emigrate. We have and shall continue to insist that those who wish to leave must be allowed to do so. Our heart also goes out today to an individual who has worked so hard for human rights progress in the Soviet Union and suffered so much for his efforts, the Nobel Prize laureate, Dr. Andrei Sakharov. Nothing more clearly illustrates the absence of what our founding fathers called a decent respect to the opinions of mankind than the cruel treatment of this great humanitarian. The Soviet Union itself would do much to regain respect within the international community if it would allow academician Sakharov and his wife, Elena Bonner, to live the rest of their lives in dignity in a place of their own choosing. We're pleased to have the Sakharov son-in-law here with us today. The Sakharovs are the best-known victims of human rights violations in the Soviet Union, but thousands of other Soviet citizens, such as Yuri Orlov or Anatoly Sharansky, whose wife, Avital, is here with us today, suffer in Soviet prisons and labor camps for the sole crimes of expressing a personal opinion, seeking to emigrate, or openly expressing their love of God. We Americans recognize a special responsibility to speak for the oppressed wherever they may be. We think here of special cases like the persecution of the Baha'i religious minority in Iran. But we also acknowledge a special obligation to speak for those who suffer the repression of totalitarian regimes, regimes that refuse to acknowledge and correct injustice, and that justify absolute state power, even as they seek to extend their cruel rule to other lands. So we call today for all free peoples of the world to unite in resisting and bringing to an end such intolerable practices as the suppression of free trade unionism, the campaign against the church and against political freedom in Nicaragua, the continuing Vietnamese occupation of Cambodia, and the barbaric war waged by Soviet troops in Afghanistan, a war which began 5 years ago this month with the Soviet invasion of that once non-aligned country. As but one of the tragic consequences of Soviet actions in Afghanistan, more than one-third of the people of that country have fled from their homes and sought refuge in internal or external exile. Finally, we welcome the recent steps taken by the Polish government, but we urge that they are followed by lasting efforts for genuine national reconciliation through effective dialogue with the Polish people. So today, we, the people of the United States, in conjunction with other freedom-loving people everywhere in the world, rededicate ourselves to the cause of human rights, to the cause of democratic self-rule and human freedom. We reassert our belief that someday the repression of the human spirit and the special tragedy of totalitarian rule will be only a distant chapter in the human past. In doing so, we're deeply aware of our nation's long struggle toward achieving these goals and our own heritage of seeking to promote these ideals throughout the world. Thomas Jefferson told us, "The mass of mankind has not been born with saddles on their backs." And the poet Archibald MacLeish once said, "Some say the hope for the liberation of humanity, the freedom of man and mind, is nothing but a dream." Well, they are right. It is. It is the American dream. Another great American literary figure, F. Scott Fitzgerald, suggested that America is a willingness of the heart. We've recently read a great deal about the young people of this nation, about whom some say this willingness of the heart no longer exists. Well, my own experiences with this generation suggest that the traditional idealism of the young, their hope to accomplish great things, their willingness to serve the cause of humanity, is not only intact, but stronger than ever. And like every generation before it, this generation hungers for a cause, for a mission that will take it outside itself and let it help lift humanity beyond the material and the immediate to new heights of human and spiritual progress. So today, let us challenge these young Americans to make our nation an even better example of what she was always meant to be. Champion of the oppressed, defender of all who reach for freedom and the right of self-determination. Let us challenge young Americans excited by technological and material progress to ensure that this progress enriches political freedom and human dignity as well. Here's a challenge that's worthy of our youth, of their vision, their energy, and their vigor. Let our younger generation lead young people throughout the world to join the democratic nations in promoting human rights and self-government and the cause of human freedom. The other night at the Kennedy Center, they had a choir, United Nations choir, 90 young people, children, in the costumes of their native countries from all over the world. And looking at them down there singing together, I couldn't help but think, good Lord, if we'd turn it all over to them, they'd get along just fine together. Maybe the world should follow their lead. There is in the book of Genesis a story of great loss, a story of man alienated from his fellow man and turning to persecution and hatred for others. Well, I believe that history is slowly working itself back to the restoration of brotherhood and mutual respect among all the peoples of the earth. So today, we rededicate ourselves to this vision and mission. We do so mindful that human might and will alone cannot achieve this goal. Aware that our ultimate success will be determined by our faith in the power of prayer, in the promises of Him who made us and even now guides us in our quest for human dignity and freedom. And now I shall quit talking and sign the proclamation.
In 2020, this year's Human Rights Day theme relates to the COVID-19 pandemic and focuses on the need to build back better by ensuring human rights are central to recovery efforts. According to the United Nations website, we will reach our common global goals only if we are able to create equal opportunities for all, address the failures exposed and exploited by COVID-19, and apply human rights standards to tackle entrenched, systematic, and intergenerational inequalities, exclusion, and discrimination. December 10th is an opportunity to reaffirm the importance of human rights in rebuilding the world we want, the need for global solidarity, as well as our interconnectedness and shared humanity. Let's all be better humans. Thank you for listening.
For more information on the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute, including information on how to become a member, information on upcoming exhibits at the Reagan Library, and more information on the legacy of President Reagan, please visit reaganfoundation.org. And don't forget to like and follow the Reagan Foundation on all social media platforms.
Until next week, thanks for listening. God bless you.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Words to Live By podcast in your iTunes or Google Play stores and on other podcast platforms as they become available. New episodes of Words to Live By come out every Tuesday. Like what you hear? Check out our A Reagan Forum podcast featuring great speeches delivered at the Reagan Library. New episodes drop every Thursday. And don't forget to follow at Ronald Reagan on Facebook, at Ronald Reagan 40 on Twitter, and Reagan Foundation on YouTube. Also, search for us on SoundCloud and Stitcher.